in the limelight.
A Palestinian man is pushing the British government to apologize for the Balfour Declaration and its legacy. But this would not come close to compensating for decades of Palestinian suffering. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Joseph Massad, writer. This article is published under the heading, Palestinians Deserve Reparations for Britain's Colonial Crimes. Stay tuned for more. Palestinian man Munib Masri recently announced his intention to sue the British government over its issuance of the 1917 Balfour Declaration and the crimes it committed during its colonial occupation of Palestine, declaring his hope that the furnace of the British legal system would finally force the British to apologize. This was not the first such attempt. In 2017, the Palestinian Authority threatened to sue Britain if it did not apologize for the declaration. In response, the government issued a statement saying it was proud of Britain's role in the creation of the fake regime of Israel. But is an apology really what Palestinians need from Britain, which conquered and occupied Palestine for 3 decades, during which it opened the country to Jewish colonists, leading to the theft of the Palestinian homeland? What about the atrocities that Britain committed against the Palestinian people during this period, especially during their Great Revolt of 1936-39? Should Palestinians not demand reparations? The Kenyans did so recently and continue to pursue their demands for reparations for the horrifying and cruel oppression and torture to which Britain subjected to Mau Mau revolutionaries in 1950s. Britain's horrific suppression of the Palestinian revolt was of a different order than its repression of Palestinian resistance in 1920s and the first half of 1930s. The Palestinian media at the time, along with Palestinian historians and revolutionaries, documented many of these atrocities, as did the British and international press of the period. One of its earliest and most egregious acts of wanton destruction was the British military's blowing up in June 1936 of significant parts of the old city in downtown Jaffa, which was then the major Palestinian commercial and cultural center, to make room for military vehicles and to prevent revolutionaries from hiding in its narrow alleys. The British also destroyed parts of the rural town of Jenin in October 1938 in pursuit of putting down the revolt. British repression also included banning Palestinian nationalist songs, flags, and anti-colonial processions, censoring or closing newspapers, and deporting foreign journalists covering the atrocities. In Nazareth, in 1937, Palestinians assassinated the district commissioner for Galilee, Louis Andrews, and his British bodyguard, and rose an Australian Protestant Zionist who had supported Jewish colonization of Galilee, was deeply loathed by Palestinians. The assassins were apprehended by the British, who arrested hundreds of Palestinians in the process and subjected them to severe torture. Another Australian who worked for the Mandate reportedly went out in Al-Quds with a revolver in hand, shooting all Palestinians in sight in revenge for the death of his compatriot. The British covered up his murder spree and sent him back to the Australian settler colony. Palestinian political prisoner Subhi al-Khadra described the British torture in this August 1938 account. The types of torture employed by the British are varied. They include beatings by fists and stomping with boots, as well as using canes for beating and flogging to death. They also included the starvings of dogs and then provoking them and pushing them to devour his flesh. Another form of torture included the British soldiers sodomizing them, as it seems that this was done to a number of people. Khadra added that the torture methods were motivated by vengeance and a release of the most savage and barbaric of instincts and of the concentrated spirit of hatred that these rednecks feel towards Muslims and Arabs. They mean to torture for the sake of torture and to satisfy their appetite for vengeance, not for the sake of an investigation nor to expose crimes. Collective punishment against Palestinian towns and villages became uniform through the use of extrajudicial executions and mass demolition of Palestinian homes. British historian Matthew Hugh has documented many of these horrors in his book on Britain's pacification of Palestine, noting that the use of white supremacist language against revolutionaries was commonplace among troops and officers. Palestinian civilians were used as human shields to protect British troops on trains and military vehicles. Palestinian detainees were incarcerated in cages under the sun, where many died of thirst and exposure. The British also used forced labor to compel Palestinian prisoners to build roads and impose financial penalties on their families. Palestinians were placed in concentration camps and behind barbed wire in Jewish colonies, where the colonists would humiliate them. Hugh reveals that troops and police detained 528,000 people for varying periods of time, from days to years, some imprisoned more than once in varying places, and this total, that exceeds the entire Muslim male population of Palestine in 1938, omits any detention from December 1936 to August 1937. It equals 37% of the entire population of Palestine in 1938. In September 1938, the Royal Ulster Rifles troops massacred Palestinians in Al Basa village, following the killing of four troops by a landmine placed by militants outside the village, and survivors were forced to dig a mass grave for the victims before the troops burnt all Al Basa on the ground. Other massacres followed in the towns of Halhul and Bait Rima. A British army officer wrote in 1938 after killing of two troops from the Royal Scots, which was punished by blowing up half a Palestinian village, "Our only regrets are that we have not been allowed to flatten the whole village. I'm sure it's the only way to deal with these people." The British also enlisted the help of Jewish colonists in repressing and killing Palestinians, employing massive numbers of Jewish police. One of the more spectacular acts of collaboration was through the special night squads organized by British officer Ord Wingate in 1938. These death squads summarily killed Palestinians. Men were lined up outside in villages, and the squads would shoot dead every eight men to instill terror in the rest. After a Palestinian attack on Jewish colonists in Tiberias, the Jewish death squads machine-gunned Palestinian residents of the village of Dobairia, who had nothing to do with the attack. They whipped villagers and put oil-soaked earth in their mouth after blowing up the British-owned petroleum company pipeline. All in all, by the time the British crushed the revolt completely in 1939, up to 9,000 Palestinians had been killed, including around 1,500 killed for allegedly collaborating with the British and the Zionists, and more than 20,000 were wounded. British military tribunals sentenced 110 Palestinian revolutionaries to death, and they were hanged. Given this horrific British record of atrocities, would a mere apology be sufficient? Rather than pursuing lawsuits to extract an unlucky apology from an unrepentant colonial power like Britain, the proper course of action should be to demand reparations for the crimes committed and destruction wrought by the British against the Palestinian people. This could include lawsuits against corporations, banks, and insurance companies that were complicit in these atrocities. While one might admire the octogenarian Masri's commitment and pledge to restore my rights and the rights of my people before I die, on the anniversary of the Balfour Declaration, his money and efforts would be better spent to the benefit of the Palestinian people by demanding reparations and financial penalties rather than a mere apology.